Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I want the ball. I want the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bag. Y'all jacking. It's a party. It's a party. It's a party.
Welcome into episode 147 of 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Rouse, joined by Adam Luckett, where it feels like it's, we were just doing this. But that was actually a little Kentucky roll call. So if you want to hear two more hours of us yammering on about random stuff, Steve Spurrier, Phil Fulmer, all the other people around the SEC hate, go check out that podcast too. Did a little double dipping this week.
We did Tuesday podcast, Kentucky roll call. 1450,
96.1.
There we go. Home of Trevor Kelce. So, yeah, check that out if you haven't heard it yet. It was a fun little show we had, Nick. Not all football talk either. We got into some other stuff.
Right.
Had some good talk about the SEC. So, and pulled some out of our you-know-what, too, I think. Some good names there. So, fun day there. And now it's time to get back to our regular scheduled programming here at 11 Personnel. And we had a couple – we had some commitment news while we were gone, Nick. Zion Childress, Tommy Zeismer, both happened pretty fast there Friday, Saturday, back-to-back. Double dip. We had a double dip commitment again. So, thanks for moving forward a week after we talked about things being slow on the recruiting trail.
Yeah.
So that's just
yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it was as soon as we – Mitch, it's almost like we needed to bring it up just to draw some attention to it, you know? So credit to us for helping Kentucky gain some momentum. But it was funny. My typical KRC co-host, TJ Walker, kept asking me, so you hear anything about that Zion Childress visit? You hear anything about that Zion Childress visit? It was like 3 days in a row. I was like, I hear it went well. Just kind of joking that every visit you always get heard, it goes well. And then I got a tip about an hour before he ultimately popped that Childress was going to commit to Kentucky. I think between the two, it's safe to say he's certainly going to make the quickest impact on the Cats. The Texas State transfer will arrive on campus for the 2022 campaign. The easy takeaway you can have from Childress's commitment is, A, he fills up a hole that was left by Vito Tisdale. That one is glaring and obvious. But I think what's most significant about this addition is that this kid is pretty new to the position, yet he's played a lot of defense. He was a high school quarterback who did some throwing and passing, but accounted for, you know, over 3,000 passing yards in his career and 2,000 rushing yards in his senior season. And as Stoops put it, as a quarterback, he has an adept knowledge of defenses because he's looked at him from the other side of the ball. So he kind of knows the right spaces that quarterbacks are looking for. So as far as a versatile player that they need to fill a spot of need right away, he doesn't check the typical boxes of a Stoops transfer, but there's a lot to like about the addition of Zion Childress.
Yeah, for me, it's more of they just plugged those here, right? Like, now at every position of the secondary, they have depth. At corner, you've got Carrington Valentine, Kedron Smith, Andrew Phillips, Jordan Robinson. So four guys for two spots there in the secondary. At safety, at one safety spot, you've got Tyrell Asian. Backing him up, you've got Taj Dotson. At the other safety spot, you've got Jalen Geiger. Backing him up is Jordan Lovett. They're adding two quality recruits this summer with Kobe Albert and Alex Safari. We're not really sure what position they're going to play yet. But it's now they're at the point where they don't have to play those guys. I think before the addition of Childress, they were going to have to play one of them. So now they're just in a position where they've raised the floor, I think. I still think there's questions about the ceiling. Nick, I mean, like, we just need to be honest about this. Outside, if you take out Joe Williams, there's not a top 500 recruit in the secondary that's going to play next year.
Huh.
There's not one on the roster until Kobe Albert and Alex Safari arrive next month in June. It just is what it is. This is kind of a low ceiling position, right? Just getting bodies, getting depth, and creating competition and finding some good players. They've gotten out of their comfort zone to get Childress and Jordan Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't really mark their short sample size track record here in the transfer portal era. That tells us that they have a hole there that they needed to be filled. Like, they could not go with what they had into the season. When we all left the Tennessee game last November, we all knew they have to get some bodies here. What they entered 2021 season with, they could not, same thing could not happen in 2022, the injury bug. So they've got some guys. They don't have, like, there's not a Kelvin Joseph or a Brandon Echols, I think, in this group. I'm not sure there's a draftable player right now in this group, but they have raised the floor, and they've strengthened a weakness, I think you would say. I don't think it's going to be a strength of the team, but they've strengthened a weakness in Zion Childress and Kedron Smith both. Bring some positional versatility in that they could play multiple spots. So say something goes wrong, somebody underperforms, or somebody gets injured, they can move Childress to a traditional safety spot. They can move Kedron Smith down inside the nickel. So you've got multiple answers to multiple tests now, okay, in case something happens. I'm not sure how good a play they can get in the secondary, but at least they've got more bullets in their chamber now in case something goes wrong or something doesn't happen according to plan.
I am perplexed a little bit. I know Vito Tisdale would have added another top 500 guy to the secondary without his injury, but it is curious that, you know, Stoops is a secondary guy. He coached Ed Reed. I mean, you would just think that the expertise and also the fact that Kentucky has produced NFL defensive players. I mean, they had three. I mean, I guess Edwards wasn't technically a starter, but let's just count them as one. They had three NFL starters in the secondary last year. You would think that they'd be recruiting that position a little bit better.
Yeah, we had some transfers here. Like, MJ Devonshire should be a starter on this team. That was a significant recruiting win, right? Mm-hmm. So that happens. You would just have to kind of dig in here. What happened? Like, Joe Williams, you were expecting a lot out of him. You know, I was on record saying he had the best tape I thought I saw in the 2020 class. Some reason it just hasn't worked, you know. So, and then you kind of got to dig into who they miss on the recruiting trail. But if you go and look, there were some probably significant misses, and then that starts to make more sense. It's, oh, they targeted this guy, didn't get him. Davis Edigbuson was maybe the one that jumps out the most. That was a guy who played a lot in Ole Miss's spring game. He is going to play for Ole Miss this year, a significant role. And so there's probably more guys like that. And Andrew Wilson Lamp, who went to West Virginia, I don't believe class of 2021. That was a guy they liked out of Ohio. He commits to West Virginia early and sticks with that commitment. So there's guys, you know, I think Wilson Lamp actually fell out of the top 500 in the on-3 consensus. But it just, I think what I'm really trying to point out is here that this is a year-over-year problem. Like, they have kind of didn't take advantage of the 2018
right
success on the recruiting trail. It kind of played out in that secondary. And you add in the turnover, the coaching, and that this is kind of in. And I think they've done a good job, like I said, strengthening a weakness. I don't think anybody's going to believe the secondary is going to be a strong suit of the Kentucky football team this fall. But you need to be better than it was last year. You need some more ball production. Kedron Smith, Zion Childress both kind of provided that. I think that was big versatility. So I think they've gotten better here, but I still think the bar is not very high for the secondary, like you're looking for here coming into the next season.
No, it's not. But I think if you did look at the if you wanted to take an optimistic take on it, it's the defense doesn't need it to be a strength in order to have success this fall. You're not exactly going to plug every hole, but
just need some pass breakups.
Yeah. Well, and go after the ball some. Like Cedric Dort, how you can play a whole season without a damn pass breakup, it's astonishing. Like just go after the ball. Go get it a little bit. Be overly aggressive. And also be overly aggressive in your pass rush, you know. And I think with some at least a little bit of experience at safety, a ton of experienced linebackers and stuff, maybe White can get a little bit more frisky, a little more aggressive in there with some of those guys. But a lot of it, you got to have big years from J.J. Weaver and Jordan Wright, because yeah,
that comes down to. And then someone in that 2020 class, a defensive line, creating a consistent pass rush. Yeah. I feel pretty good about that group fitting the run, but they need somebody to merge as an interior rusher to not be Josh Pascal, but fill some of that lost production as an interior rusher.
Yeah, and, you know, in previous years, it's come from unexpected places. Like Calvin Taylor was leading the SEC in sacks at the end of the regular season back in 2019. So maybe Ox is one of those guys. Ripka showed a little bit when filling in for Pascal, but he's got to get his body right. So jury is certainly still out. But Kentucky, you know, you mentioned Josh Pascal. That takes us kind of to Tommy Zeesmer, where that's been a lot of the
– Yeah, that's easy comp.
No doubt. Bigger guy who we saw camp with Kentucky last year from Boyle County, an outstanding football program that Justin Haddix is really – We all knew it. Chuck Smith made it a power. And I don't want to say, I mean, but they dipped ever so slightly. Haddix comes over, the former Breathitt County quarterback who took Corbin to a state championship game and has now won back-to-back state titles. Zeesmer was one of those guys, though, Luckett, that, you know, we kind of briefly mentioned what does Kentucky actually think about this group of in-state talent? And I thought they were going to hold out on a lot of these guys until they took a second look at them at camps over the summer. But apparently they didn't need one for Zeesmer. I don't know if, you know, you wanted some more good news to pile on top of the odd Chris Rodriguez Friday afternoon news. But I was surprised. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing because, like I said, he comes from a good program and has a lot of upside. But I wasn't so sure that Kentucky was going to take a commitment from Zeesmer at this time.
It definitely had the kind of feel of he got the green light and he didn't wait.
Oh, especially looking at that graphic. It wasn't the typical
he could
UK
not
football
wait.
Graphic.
Wait, yeah, he could not wait to get in there. So, yeah, interesting little timing on that. Like, what intel did they get here late? Or what happened to make it the green light?
Right.
What happened here? The season ended December, early December for Zeesmer.
Mm-hmm.
It's May. You've had a long time to kind of look at his tape, evaluate the other options on your board. So, what happened? Like, that's obviously something we'll probably never know, but mm-hmm. It's curious to wonder about. You turn on Zeesmer's tape, Nick. There's size concerns, right? He's 6'1", 242.
Yeah,
that is small for the position he's going to play. He's gonna add weight, but he's probably gonna get up to 270. And that's gonna be about it. So he's gonna be a little bit on the smaller side. Now he's got really long arms. I've heard up to 6'8", 6'9", wingspan. I don't know.
Right.
They do show up on tape. So that is there. It's obviously a size concern. But this dude plays hard as hell. He forklifts offensive linemen at the point of attack. There's weight room videos he's putting out where he's already benching 330. I think he's power cleaning in the 300s. So, like, I don't think there's much about work ethic and mm-hmm. playing hard. He comes from a good program, so he's going to be pretty close to his ceiling, I would imagine.
Good culture fit.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And this, the scheme fit makes sense in Kentucky's 3-4 front, playing like Pascal. He has some Pascal traits where he's got, you know, quick twitch, short area quickness where he can shoot gaps. And then he has value as an interior rusher, I think, because of that quickness. And that length is going to help, would help a lot as a pass rusher. So there's a lot to like about him, I think, from that standpoint. He's a guy who's not going to play right away. He needs a redshirt year, but there is a lot to like about him as a prospect. I'll get why they were maybe a little shy, because there is maybe some ceiling questions with him. But to me, he's a safe bet to come in here and be at least a solid player for you, a solid scholarship player where he's contributing on your defensive line because he plays with power, because he can get skinny, get through creases, and because he's an obvious, I think, scheme fit for that 3-4 versatile defensive end they like to use, whether he's taking tackles as a 4-eye or a 5 technique in, on rundowns, and then passing downs, he can slide inside, play some 3-tech, and provide hopefully some interior rush.
And speaking of the program, that's back-to-back years, somebody from Boyle County. They got a commitment from Jackson Smith, brought on a walk-on, Cole Lanner, that caught a touchdown in the spring game. And they've also been recruiting Dakota Patterson, who transferred from Corbin to be with his old coach. He was once a kind of top 20 recruit, but had some health stuff happen last year, so lost a lot of weight. If he could turn it back on and end up becoming
a big senior – people are going to jump on him.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of Power 5 interest, it seems like, surrounding him at the moment.
Right, right. So but this could be – this will be a big year for him at Boyle County. But good that Kentucky is kind of circling the wagons around there, though, because that's Neil Brown's alma mater. He recruits that place hard. I think his first
that's
from Boyle County.
Receiver Reese
something.
Smith, maybe. Not Smith.
I know it's a Reese, though. And it's not Tommy Reese.
It's Reese. His first name's Reese.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone listening to this is yelling at us right now.
In their car, yeah.
So that's – but the, not only that, like, that's a recruiting battle we're seeing a lot here.
Oh. You know,
the Cameron Calhoun thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending on what side you're on, right?
Right, right.
Kamari Burns, who's one of their bigger edge targets in this class, out of the Columbus suburbs. To the visits, official visits, he's announced in June, Virginia and Kentucky, and then I think Penn State one in there. I mean, there's a few other targets that both these schools are in on. And so this, along with Cincinnati, these two schools seem like the programs that are butting heads quite frequently here in the class of 23. So it's just something to monitor as the calendar moves forward and the summer develops and targets get added to your board, removed from your board, and vice versa.
Yeah, and we alluded to it last week or discussed it about Kentucky being quiet. We still don't have a ton of official visits on the board for those camps next month, June 5th and June 12th. But I think the way things are shaking out, especially with this the 2024 recruiting board, you wrote about it this week. We are getting a better idea of what quarterbacks they're targeting. Who shows up to camp is going to be significant, because it feels
Right.
It feels like Kentucky is in a good spot with Dante Reno, who's also being recruited heavily by South Carolina. He's got interest from a lot of big-time programs. There's a lot of Kentucky connections. The twins from Somerset play with him on the defensive side of the ball. There was a Liam Cohen connection there, and Liam Cohen and Scott Woodward connection. That one, I feel like Kentucky could get a nice in. It's important to get him on campus. If not, they did offer Danny O'Neill from Indianapolis Cathedral last week. He feels like he's going to end up being a Brommer maker, though, at Purdue. They offered him early. He's been there quite a bit. That guy's on the board. And then Lloyd Carr's kid, CJ Carr, talked about
– grandson.
Yeah, grandson. Excuse me. Yeah, couldn't be his kid. His kid's 50 years old probably. But he mentioned that Florida and Kentucky are in contention to get visits from him. But – as you talked about on KRC on Tuesday, like, it's all about, can you get him on campus for a visit? Because that's where things can really progress quickly.
That's where the magic happens, right?
Yeah.
That shows interest both sides, and you that's how you really start amping up relationship building for these quarterbacks. And like we talked about, this time is now. That's when you put the work in for the 2024 quarterbacks, like the team that Elaine committed months ahead, it's all this summer is when it all happens. You get in contact with them when they're sophomores, you build the relationship, you get them on campus, you keep building it, and then you head into the season. You should head into September with a good idea where you stand at quarterback, who are your two or three, four realistic options there. So for Kentucky in the class of 2024, we're just seeing some names emerge. I think the CJ Carr development, like, Nick, they're not going to get CJ Carr, right? Mm-hmm. That kid's going somewhere else probably. But the fact that they've been able to get in that mix, that they've made some headway there, I think that's a good sign, specifically on probably Rich Scangarello, that he's at least making some positive moves there.
Well,
in QB recruiting, which is going to be his job outside of calling plays on Saturday.
And in addition to it, it also shows that they're using some of that Will Levis offseason NFL draft hype to their advantage.
Yeah, no doubt. No, 100%.
Yeah. And that's important because Kentucky has not started a high school recruited quarterback since Drew Barker back in 2016 against Southern Miss. So it's been a while. It'd be nice to get one on board and not lean so heavily on the transfer board, because Kentucky's had success with transfers. It's mostly been to keep the boat afloat for the most part with Terry Wilson and Steven Johnson. You got a difference maker in Will Levis, but a lot of times you're going to be rolling the dice. And if you can get one of these kids out of high school, I hate to keep using that term, that raising the floor or whatever, but it adds –
it just helps your other recruiting efforts, though. I mean, that's the one thing with getting high school quarterbacks. Like, you know, you're going to have a boom and bust right there, but it builds momentum and helps you recruit other positions when you get those guys in the barn.
See Louisville and Pierce Clarkson.
And so, like, we need to – like, the season's going to end on Thanksgiving Saturday, and Kentucky's going to go to the portal. Like, the starter – more than likely next year is be a portal quarterback. If Levis has a year, people think we're going to have, or thinks he's going to have, Kentucky's going to have their pick of the litter in the portal. That's just, I think that's almost, you consider that a fact almost. They're going to have plenty of options in the portal, and that they're going to have a guy there, but eventually you can't do that forever. Cause what happens if you have a down year or you don't just keep coming up,
right?
You hit peaks and valleys. You got to hit on the high school guy. And so I think – but what this – I think what this era does is – this transfer portal era is it should raise your cutoff for targets in high school. Just be signing a quarterback just to sign a quarterback. I think in the past you had to at least get one guy in there each class. Now you don't really have to do that. You can target high-level prospects – take your swings at them. And I think that's what they're trying to do with Carr potentially. And then Reno's obviously up there. And I think we might see a name or two more here emerge for the next couple of weeks. But that's really.
Hell, they kind of did it with Malachi Nelson. You know,
Malachi Nelson. Yeah. He's another.
And he.
Chris Fasano's also like that. He was in that kind of area because he blew up last year. They were in on him a little early, but he started to blow up. And he's committed to Clemson. He's a top prospect in the class of 2023 right now. That's kind of the situation you're going to be in. Like your swings with some guys, and then go from and you have the portal as an option. And so that we're kind of it is like June month is important because after June, who really are the guys that they're potentially going to go after? Who's on their board and who's realistic? And a lot of that action will be determined at the camps, and we'll get to see a few of them while we're there in attendance.
It'll be here before you know it. We need to discuss some rankings, a couple rankings, as a matter of fact, right after this. Look at the annual CBS Sports rankings are out of the Power Five head coaches. And I love it because Mark Stoops continuing to climb the ladder up to number 16 after coming in at number 22 last year. one spot behind our old pal James Franklin, but only behind national championship winners in the Southeastern Conference. Nick Saban, number one. Kirby Smart, number two. Jimbo Fisher, number five. Next man up, Mark Stoops.
Brian Kelly, number seven.
Oh, yeah. I guess technically he's in
the college football play. Or, well, Jimbo hadn't been to the playoff, so you can't say that either.
Yeah, yeah.
He snuck in there, little Irishman.
And I just always forget he's there, too, because it's just so weird. It's going to take me a long time to get used to that, you know?
Yeah, no.
You went from like the most Louisiana guy ever to the least Louisiana guy ever.
They play Florida State Labor Day Sunday in the Dome. And seeing it, that hit, I think, a lot of people. Like, Brian Kelly's really the LSU head coach.
Yeah. Which, by the way, what the hell is ABC doing putting all their chips in on Mike Norvell? The amount of games that Disney is banking on Florida State to be relevant.
You got to show some ACC games.
But, man, that giving them the Black Friday time slot, like, it could get ugly.
I think that could be a potentially. So I don't hate that. A good rivalry game there on Black Friday.
I don't hate it either, but just do the Egg Bowl. I guess they're doing Thanksgiving now instead of Black Friday, so that's good. But I guess you could see a world where they're 2-7-4 teams. One's going to be 7-5. One's going to be 8-4.
That's or five, both 5-6 playing for a bowl game.
Oh, that'd be pretty fun. Luckett, is there any were there any significant takeaways you had from the coach rankings? I'm not going to lie. I was scrolling through trying to find the biggest droppers. But the fact of the matter is most of the big-time droppers just get fired. So you can't rank them anymore. But Mel Tucker jumped 33 spots. Sam Pittman jumped 28. Those were a few, I think, notable leaps. We mentioned him earlier, Neil Brown. He's slid 11 spots down.
A year for Neil Brown.
Yeah, yeah.
They open up with Pitt in the backyard brawl. Big, big year for Neil Brown. For me, Nick, like, I am a big Dave Aranda fan. I've been on the Dave Aranda train for a long time.
So what you got you and Saban to become buddies.
Yes. But he went 51 spots.
Also, the fact that they ranked him, like, dead last. I know I get it. He was a first-year coach.
Bad first year, but, but that's kind of absurd. Like, he did a great job, but he won the Big 12. Okay. Yeah,
and beat Gundy on like a walk-off, basically.
Yeah, he's a top 20 coach. Like, and if I had to start a program, oh, he's at the top of my list. But that's crazy. Recency bias. Hashtag recency bias.
Our boy Shane Beamer jumped up 24 spots. He was dead last year before.
You knew that was coming, right?
Yeah, right.
But one thing that stuck out here, Nick, is like there's two guys Stoops has beaten here recently, Penn State and Iowa, when Kentucky was underdogs. Or no, underdog Penn State, they were favored against Iowa. But they were unranked against Iowa. So that obviously not. And overall, it's just at the level. It's just in a lot since the end of last year. You're seeing it play out in the win total. You're seeing it play out in rankings like this. When the AP Top 25 is released later this summer, you should see it play out. Kentucky should be ranked preseason for the first time since 1978 when that poll hits this summer.
First time since 1978? Jeez. Woo! Man. That's a fun number to play around with.
And I believe Kentucky may have been on probation that year.
And yeah.
So I don't think their ranking stuck because they were on probation.
Yeah, because 77 was that was the Peach Bowl team, and then they got put on probation the following offseason, won 10 games, went 10-1, but couldn't go to a postseason game because of that probation.
Right.
I think that was back when not Derek Ramsey, but Sonny Collins was wearing fur coats and driving convertibles and stuff.
Glory years.
Yeah. Yeah, times are a little bit different. Freddie had a great post about it, talking about the differences between his playing days and Will Levis's. I especially the $25 a weekend to eat. I just love that thought. Granted, you could get a big meal for $5 back in the day, but those dudes were crushing that in a night. You know, funny stuff. If you haven't checked it out, I'd also encourage you, by the time this comes out, I think it'll be out. Over the summer, I'm going to be doing a retrospective type series, looking back on a decade of Mark Stoops. This will be his 10th season this fall. All he needs is two wins to have the most wins all time as a Kentucky head coach. So looking back,
could do it against Florida.
Yeah, which would be monumentous. It's kind of fun to look back to how things have changed over time. And I'm starting with the 10 most influential people of the Stoops era, a mix of players, coaches, Joe Kraft and Mitch Barnhart are in there. I put them one in the same though. I can't write that much about some admins, which I know Joe Kraft is an administrator, but come on. I mean, you know, he's a big deal, but I started with McGinnis at 10 and then round out a top 10 with Vince Mero coming in. The big dog is number one because I really can't see, like, you can't imagine one without the other, you know?
He, just the amount of players Mero has pulled in here and then being able to not only, like, get their reputation built in Ohio, but now, like, in-state, they're getting mostly every guy they want. Here that they lose their fair share, right? Get everybody getting targets, and Merrill's a big reason why. You kind of dig back a few years ago when they made that change, the in-state prospects were like, why isn't Merrill recruiting us? And so that changed, and you've seen them kind of own the state since then, and now they're entering this season with 20, I think if they're up to like right around 20 scholarship players from the state of Kentucky. So just from talent acquisition standpoint, which is half of this job, it's getting players into your program. Merrill's had a huge say in the success for Stoops.
That's
why he's paid the way he is.
Right, right. And not only has Vince established that recruiting pipeline for Kentucky football as the big dog, but he's also been the big dog. You know, Mark Stoops is not exactly the most flashy guy around, but his blue-collar mentality folks appreciate. But we need a hype man. We need somebody to get us excited. And Vince Merrill has been the P.T. Barnum, the right-hand man for Mark Stoops. He's talking trash to Louisville. He's firing shots off of Mel Tucker.
Popular campus.
He feels like one of us, too. I think that's why people really appreciate Vince Mero, is you would not be too shy to walk up to him and ask him if you can buy him a beer at the bar, you know, and he might ask for a fruity drink instead or just turn you down. But Vince Mero has really been the people's coach of the Kentucky football program. And that's, I don't think you can overstate his significance to creating that connection between fans and the Kentucky football program. Right now, it feels like there's a chasm between fans and the Kentucky basketball program. Vince Mero is a big reason why Kentucky fans are so drawn to Mark Stoops' football program. And not only that, too, he's brought in some of the best players to ever play here. Benny Snell, Lynn Bowden, who are also on this list. Wandell Robinson. You know, I have Benny number three on there because Benny, he was Kentucky's
– the first cool player Stoops had.
Yes. And like with Cal, John Wall made it instantly cool. It took a little bit longer, but Stoops' rebuild did not come with a quarterback. And that's usually your quickest way to a rebuild, right? It's Charlie Strong had Teddy Bridgewater. Bobby had Lamar. Like, you know, that's your quick fix. Stoops has been able to do this without that, but he got Benny Snell and that, I mean, that story Drake Jackson had of Benny coming in, they're eating like wings somewhere. And Benny's like, no, I'm playing and starting this year. And they're like, dude, you're crazy. That was the kind of swagger this program needed. And he left in the most dramatic way possible, too, to cap off an historic career in Kentucky.
Yeah. He ties in also with another guy on your list, Eddie Grand, just a philosophy change. Now you get down the road and it really kind of hurt them. And then that's when they went and got another guy on your list. But if they don't like that offense doesn't change in 2016, Mark Stoops is not here anymore.
Done. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Really on this list, there's five guys. So half the list. And it's all related to that 2016 year. So they kind of established everything that started their winning culture. Where they're going to be built from the inside out. We're going to have offensive line. Our offensive line is going to lead the team. We're going to recruit really well on the offensive line. And we're going to run the ball. We're going to be committed to running the ball. We're going to be committed to getting tough yards. We're committed to running it when the other team knows we're running it. I mean, that's really kind of been the basis of their team. So Schlarman builds up the offensive line. They have a revelation in Benny Snell as a three-star true freshman running back. Eddie Grand totally kind of reinvents himself twice at Kentucky. In 2016 and then in 2019, in the kind of the offense they're running. And then Steven Johnson at quarterback provides like the unexpected toughness for the team that no one really saw coming. And then Austin McGinnis, the clutch playmaking he provided, big wins that at periods where the games probably could have gone either way if he misses kicks against Mississippi State and Louisville. So the two biggest wins of the year he had. He had his fingerprints distinctly on, and it really kind of set him for his team. And really, that's when everything started to flip for them. Because that's when Louisville started their nosedive, and they started to figure out who they were as a program and what they needed to succeed and how they needed to operate. And ever since then, they keep climbing the ladder. And I think the 2016 season was really huge in all of that. I mean, it set the tone for that. And I think for the specifically like Stoops, I think it taught him, right, this is how we operate and this is how we're going to win here.
Well, and if you, when looking back at that time, the 2015 team, they were, I think, 4-1 in getting votes. Into the top
25. He made a bad offensive coordinator hire.
Right? Yeah. And then things kind of unraveled. They couldn't pick up that easy win at Vanderbilt because they got stumped on a trick play. You know, that was the like, okay, is Stoops really cut out for the job? Because in those 50-50 type games, they didn't know how to win. They didn't have that established culture to win games where the margin of error is so, so incredibly thin. And that year really helped them get over that hump. Now you got a little bit more of a margin of error. But I think, look at your 16-2 stat against Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. That's going back to 16, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you can even go into the 2015. Well, it's 18-3 in 2015 because they beat South Carolina, Missouri in 15.
Yeah. So, I mean, like that – and that's how you move up the ladder is you start beating those teams consistently. And a lot of those games have been 50-50 games. You know, I had some guy on my radio who's talking about a lot of those South Carolina games. I mean, Kentucky turned it over -3 in the turnover battle on the road and still won at South Carolina last year because they knew they were the better team and they grinded out a win because they have established that baseline, that identity as a program. And it all goes back to those guys early on back in 15 and 16.
That's why I wasn't really worried about the turnover issues early because Missouri and South Carolina were both close games, but Kentucky was 14 to 17 points better if it wasn't for those turnovers.
Right.
And so, they just learned how to win, and now they're doing it in different ways. Liam Cohen talked about this a lot, just kind of the culture of winning. They know how to practice. They know how to, you know, they know how to act in games, how, you know, not to get too high, not to get too low, how to grind. And I think that all showed up, and that all started – 2016. I mean, you look what Schlarman built on the offensive line. Yeah. It's continuing. Now we still have to see what kind of recruiter Yenzer is going to be, but that's built for long success. Obviously, the offensive line has led to great running back success, and we've seen Snell have the great years. Bolden went off for a crazy year. Chris Rodriguez could set another program record for rushing, and so all of it started right there. And then I think the other big one. one guy you didn't have on this list, but
yeah, I wanted to hear my omission that I'm curious.
But I mean, there was a place for him when I'm looking at this. But Brad White kind of coming in here, getting Josh out to break through as a senior. And then if you look at SP Plus, which is kind of a weighted advanced stat metric that Bill Connolly puts together, Kentucky didn't have a top 40 defense the whole Stoops era. I'd arrived in 2018, and they've had a top 40 defense ever since. Like, we were frustrated with last year's defense, but that defense also won them the South Carolina and Florida games early in the year, mm-hmm. and then the injury bug bit. But they have a baseline level now with White where they're not way down. They're middle of the pack in the SEC now. And that's a good place to be. You're going to win a lot of games if you can be at that point. And that's why this year's so exciting, because if that offense can level up and get to like a top 10 offense, that with a top 35 defense, it's a group that's going to be in position to win a lot of games. And then when you look at the schedule, how it breaks down, you know, you're only going to be a significant dog in one game this year, Nick.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be a heavy favorite in about five games. And then you're going to be a pretty good favorite against South Carolina, Missouri, probably around a touchdown. And then you're going to have, you know, toss-up games mixed in there. And then you're probably going to be about a 4 or 5, that's as of right now, dog to Tennessee. So you're looking at heavy favorite 6, potentially. So dog 1, and then gray area in between. And if you've got a team that's top 10 in offense, potentially top 35 defense,
should be in good shape.
Right. And that's why you're seeing the win total at 8.5.
Yeah. Even though I'm a little that one didn't have any pushes available, so I think that's why they bumped it up. So, you know, I'm a little skeptical of that one.
But if it's 8, I feel good about the over. I feel good about this team getting 8-4. So you're getting your money back. And if they're going 9-3 before they're going 7-5.
Yeah. And that's why when it actually, you know, hits DraftKings,
as long as you avoid injury, big injury bug. But yeah.
Right. But if I'm going to, my hope is that it's 8 on DraftKings, because that's the normal app that I use over in Indiana. I'll play that one. If it's 8.5, I don't think I'll touch it, because then there's the emotional, strings that are attached to it as well. And I don't want to get burned. I've done pretty well with these season win total bets, and don't want this to be the year that I jinx it or something like that, all because it's high. So I'll be careful if it gets up to 8.5 instead of 8. One thing we didn't touch on that we should briefly before we get out of here, because there for a moment it looked like things were going to be awful, but the whole Friday afternoon that Chris Rodriguez had was a freaking roller coaster, all because an attorney got the date wrong on the calendar and didn't show up to his court date. There for a moment there, like, I was at Florida game, it was looking a little worrisome. Not to downplay the severity of Chris's actions for the DUI that he did on the night he graduated. Like, obviously that's dumb. Don't drink and drive. You're putting others in dangers you shouldn't. But right now, that's
let the cake bake on that.
Yeah. And that's probably one game suspension. Maybe in the long run, it's what gets Chris dialed in to reach the goals he wants. But yes, let the cake bake. But if you were going to be adding more stuff on top of that, a failure to appear, that's when you get into like some serious, okay, is something going on with Chris here? Like, what's the deal here with it? Then you could have some serious concerns, a lengthier potential suspension. And if you just look at that Florida game on paper, I know that it's first year head coach in his second game, like we said, coming off that Utah game. But Benny Snell had 170 rushing yards when they won down there, and Kentucky averaged 7 yards a carry. You know, like, to win on the road in an environment like that, and what will be a very big game in the Swamp, you've got to be able to control the ball to keep, and especially on the ground, just to keep that defense honest and also kind of keep that crowd quiet. Removing Chris from the equation right there, don't want to think about that. Don't want to play that scenario out.
When you look at Florida's personnel, they've got 2 edge guys that they feel pretty good about that are probably going to be draft picks, but and then they got 1 defensive tackle, Gervon Dexter, who's pretty good. But there's huge depth concerns on the defensive line. And so run defense might be an issue for that team. going into that game. So that's just something to keep in mind. And Chris Rodriguez, if you go, he didn't really get a lot of reps because they couldn't convert third downs last year against Florida, but he had a very good game against Florida last year, Kroger Field. So we just thought we need to let that play out and see where it plays. There's been instances before where players have gotten DUIs and they've not been suspended for a game under Stoops. So I would not be surprised if he's running with the ones against Miami, Ohio on Labor Day Saturday. So we'll just, because there's plenty of time to punish them or whatever you need to do in house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever, however you handle that as an organization. Because I mean,
just say too,
we're still 100 and some days away from the game even starting.
I would not want Corey Edmund in charge of punishing me.
Yeah.
That dude.
You know, there's steps outside the practice field that they put in specifically for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you all don't know Coach Ed, his daughter, Leah Edmund, all-time great volleyball player at UK, he's the bald, scary guy on the sideline that is calm during the games. He's got his shades on. Usually
you see him on
arms cross.
Mark Hill's usually the one getting hyped up on the sideline during the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Coach Ed plays it cool during the games, but when it's running time, there ain't nobody scarier. Hell, there was a couple of years back where I did like a summer interview with both of them. And, you know, in an interview, you kind of want it to be on your terms. So, you know, I'm trying to ask questions. And then when they start just going and going, I was like, oh my God, these are, you're talking about some alpha dogs. Like, over my head there.
Yeah, strength coach is it's a different breed.
Oh, man. All right,
personality, Mike, no doubt.
We've done a lot of ball, but it's a big weekend for the PGA. I need to get some picks. I've already penciled in betting on Jordan Spieth this weekend, playing not too far from his home turf. He's been good this year, won a tournament a few weeks back, came in second last week. I know I'm betting Jordan Spieth in this one. Who else should I be throwing some coin down on? I need some winners.
Yeah, Jordan Spieth going for the career slam. The PGA Championship is the one he has not brought home yet. But when you look at, of course, we haven't played here, Nick, at Southern Hills and Tulsa since 07. In that tournament, there were only like four guys that broke under par. Tiger was one of them. He won at 8-under. He had I think it was plus one on Thursday, then 69, 63, 69. To win the tournament. When you look at this course, it's very long. There's only two par fives. They're both over 600 yards. There's seven par fours between 450 and 500 yards. In the fairway, there's undulations in the grass, so whether it's hills or whatnot, it makes it tough to get a lie. And then the greens are small and they're elevated. So if you miss the green, your ball's running off and you're in a bunker and you're having to get up. It's pretty tough to get up and down. So it's going to be an open like PGA Championship. Like scoring is going to be very difficult here. I think they're even calling for winds in the forecast, which is going to make it even rough. So really, what you need here is guys who gain strokes off the tee and also can gain strokes approaching. Like Spieth has gotten a lot better off the tee, Nick. So for him, like a year or two ago, he would not even been on the board here, but he's on the board this week. Like that's a bet that you could potentially talk yourself into. He's top 30 in both strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach. He's 33rd in driving distance. So he's really improved that. So, and he's playing hot. For me, like Colin Morikawa was obviously the natural pick here. Won the PGA in 2020, won the British Open last year, 8th in approach, 10th tee to green with the PGA pedigree. He's ranked 3rd in the world. The guy who I'm picking to win is Will Zalatoris. Better odds. Zalatoris 28-1. He's performed really well at majors here recently. He consecutive finishes second and sixth at the Masters. He was T8 in the PGA 2 years ago. He had a top 10 at the U.S. Open. He's first in approach and 11th off the tee. 28-1 to win. It's a guy I really like. So really, when you're looking at some metrics, that's really what you're looking for. So I think Morikawa, Thomas, Rahm, Spieth are all obviously your popular plays because they can do that, obviously. But if you're looking for more like long shots, like Mito Perez, a guy from Chile, he's ranked 100th in the world. He's 13th in approach, 30th off the tee. He's made 6 of 7 cuts. He's had 3 top 20s. So a guy like him, you could get pretty good odds for like a top 20 bet on him. A top 40 bet, I've locked him in at plus 110. So if you're getting that already at plus 40, then those odds are only going to increase.
What was his name again?
Mito Pereira. P-E-R-E-I-R-A.
Okay.
So he's had pretty strong form here. Guys you want to stay away from or some – like Shane Lowry was 2nd, I believe, at the Masters. He's played really well this year. He's really good approach, but he just doesn't get off the tee very well. And so those guys, you're kind of out of it if you can't get off the tee here. And so that's really what you're kind of looking for, a combination of that. Typically this tournament, you know, we've had some long shots come out of the woodwork, but the way this course is set up, it's horses for courses. So the big guys are going to play well here. And so that's really what you're looking for. And then maybe you're trying to find value with some guys who maybe can bomb it off the tee later if you're looking for a long shot or a make cut bet or someone sneaky matchups to play.
Speaking of horses for courses, we also got the Preakness this weekend. Rich Strike, more like Chicken Strike, too scared to go up to Baltimore to race at Pimlico. So no Triple Crown winner this year. Won't be as eventful. Epicenter is such a big favorite. I think it's the best three-year-old of all of the three-year-olds. But I would like to see Secret Oath, the Kentucky Oaks filly, be the 6th filly to bring home the Black Eyed Susan. So
is it lame that the champ's running?
Yeah. I mean, I totally got lame. It's very lame. But the thing was, too, when the trainer the day after said, like, I normally don't do this. I almost never do this. I'm going to try it anyway. I was like, this is how we're champ running. And also, like, let's be real. They got the perfect – everything happened perfectly for Rich Strike to win the Derby. If not, that's Epicenter's race.
Yeah. Sound like the plan was maybe to have a good finish at the Derby and then rest and try to go win the Belmont.
Yeah.
They messed around and got a triple double at the Churchill Downs.
Exactly. Well, and that was the, you didn't even, like, Larry Colmus didn't even say Rich Strike's name until it got to the 16th pole and took the lead. Well, they're taking that final 16th out. So, like, even if it ran a great race in a smaller field, it's not going as far. So, it's just going to be harder to play catch-up. So, it's not a race that I'm going to bet heavily on.
Yeah, it seems like Epicenter. What is he, like, 4-5 or something?
6-5, yeah. And he'll end
up being – it's his race to win.
Yeah, it'll end up being a 4-5, 3-5 kind of deal. I wouldn't be – like, Simplification ran 4th. You're going to get some good odds on it. And that's a horse that likes to be kind of up front. I could see that horse coming in if it still has some gas in the tank from the Derby. And early voting's early speed, but it's going to get a ton of money too. So this is going to be a hard race to win some money on, but
it just stinks that the Triple Crown,
I know,
is totally taken away.
And you know what? Whoever out there is like, they need to move back to races so all the horses are one way. Get your chicken shit out of here, okay? It'd be one thing if we were still 50 years removed from a firm, but by God, we had 2 horses win the Triple Crown in the last 10 years. Less than that. Get out of here with that nonsense. Oh, we need more time. The horse ain't good enough to win the Triple Crown. Should be running the damn race, okay? It's just a fact of the matter. Sometimes American pharaohs and justifies don't grow on trees, and that's the way it should be. I don't want to hear any of this whining from people. Oh, man, it's too hard. They don't win such a quick turnaround. You know what? It's once in a lifetime opportunity. It's very rare that it happens. Relish it when it can. We're not changing it. If we keep up with this bull crap, I'm going to lose my damn mind like it.
Ugh. That's why I don't like if he, I don't know. I guess I don't get it. If he loses the Preakness, do you have to run him in the Belmont? Like, what's the difference between running him in the Preakness? They just think they have a better chance to win?
Yeah, exactly.
A bigger difference in purse?
Yeah, and there's not a significant difference in purse, but it's basically they don't think their horse is good enough to win this race. Like, that's
flat pretty out. Much we know we caught lightning in a bottle.
Well, and like Country House, when it beat Maximum Security by DQ, like, they were like, oh, God, let's retire to stud. While it's right, stud fees are the highest, you don't want to tank a horse's value. And if he runs too quick, then he can't run again.
Yeah, maybe that's what they're considering too. They know he can finish well at the Belmont, so maybe that'll.
Yeah, and then you know what? The way the schedule is, the summer schedule, Like, you can get a month off, run the Belmont, get a month off, run the Travers, get a month off, run, you know, Haskell. Like there's much more time in between the bigger stakes. So it, like, it makes sense. It's just not a lot of people are going to be watching NBC on Saturday, and I don't think those folks are too happy.
I get it. It just takes a lot of luster off it. It's what some in the biz would call hashtag soft.
Yeah, yeah, we would. Well, I can enjoy the sports weekend. Joe Buck providing a little commentary. Yeah. ESPN, they're putting him to work early, which I appreciate, even though it's kind of weird hearing Joe Buck call.
Yeah, nice weekend. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, PGA Championship, Preakness action on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Solid sports weekend here. And then enjoy it, because it's going to get here soon.
Yeah, it's going
to
be.
We're about 100 days out from week zero, so let the countdown begin.
Yeah, 100 days from tomorrow. So, right. And then 100 days till the Kentucky football season is May 26th. Yes, I already know that. Hell, we need to have a live pod breaking down all the game kickoff times the first 3 weeks of the year.
Playing out our Saturdays already.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Well, for Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Thanks for listening. Go Cats and go Kroger.